Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for your favorite show. The Weekend Report is on the radio.
Oh, yeah. The Weekend Report is on your radio, and we appreciate you listening to it. My name is Tony Colombo. Thank you so much for joining us. My partner, Chris Arps, looks fired up today.
Tony, we've got so much. I say this every week. I know there's redundant, but wow, we've got resignations. We've got further stuff with the Stinger and Jamestown Mall where we grew up. It's crazy. Oh, it's crazy.
That stuff is crazy. When you don't get to do this every day, like Mark and Annie and Dave, and it just builds up. It just piles on top of each other all week long. And then
that's a good visual.
It just goes, bah.
Is that a good visual,
I just
got
to get it all out. We got 2 hours to get it all out. There's a lot to get out.
We got handy wipes here to clean it all up.
That's right. So we are going to have a, you know what? I didn't even have this. Uh-oh. I didn't even have this note yet because it was newer.
And it's in red ink, so that means it's important.
And put an exclamation point next to it, so that means we really got to get to it. But we'll do that in a little bit.
All right.
So we've got a great show for you today. We are going to be speaking to Ryan Findley. He is the executive director of the American Soybean Association. I know that sounds maybe not as thrilling as it could be.
Becky teased me about that. She's like, oh, thrilling. But she really did.
But the fact is that Ryan has a very good handle on and can give us some insight on how these Trump tariffs in China are affecting farmers, because that's the go-to talking point for the Democrats, that or anybody that's against these, not even just the Democrats, just anybody who's against these tariffs. You know, they are saying, you know, trade war is bad for everybody, and especially the farmers. Think of the farmers. Yeah. It's hurting the farmers. Now, we've heard a lot of farmers call in. Now, all of it's anecdotal, but we've had many farmers call in and say either A, it's bad, but not as bad as people are saying it is. And B, we would rather sit out a little. We would rather have a little bit of a bad period to get to the good stuff on the other side. Yep. But who knows? Just because we've had a couple of calls say that doesn't mean that that's what the broad farming community thinks. And I think Ryan will be able to shed some light on that. So that's going to be very interesting.
I think it'll be interesting to have him on because soybeans is the number one export crop of Missouri. So these tariffs on soybeans and other commodities really affect our farmers and people here in Missouri. And as you know, Tony and Brian, we have a presidential election coming up, and people are worried. Are the farmers going to still stay with Donald Trump because of these tariffs?
Right.
And so it'll be interesting to get their perspective on the tariffs and the effects that they've had.
Yep. Also, Tim Jones, former Missouri Speaker of the House, of course, host of the Tim Jones Show every Sunday night here on 97.1, is going to join us a little bit later as well, because he will be able to really give us the details on a crazy week in Jefferson City, the last week of the legislative session. A lot of stuff went down. A lot of stuff went down all session long. But, you know, as they always do, they hold off to the very last second for some of the bigger, more controversial issues. And then they tackle them all at once at the very end.
You know, in politics, Tony, we call that the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk to Tim Jones about the nitty-gritty.
That's right.
That's a technical term.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nitty-gritty.
I have never heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, nitty-gritty.
It's just this one Missouri small term that nobody else uses.
Nitty-gritty.
Gritty. What about the nitty-gritty dirt band?
Yeah. I've heard of them.
Yeah. Hi, Brian.
What's going on, man?
It's Brian McKenna. He's our new producer. He's here, too. So, how was your week?
It was really busy and crazy.
Did you do something to your hair?
It does look a little more blonde.
Yeah.
You dye your hair?
Did I dye it personally?
Well, did you have your hair dyed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wife, she thought that it might look good, like platinum blonde.
Did she?
Yes. Mm. And I thought, you just want me to look as much like a punk as possible.
I'm glad you said that. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting look.
It is.
Yeah, man.
But your hair's naturally kind of blonde anyway, though.
Yeah, this is what it looked like when I was a baby.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So. You look like you should be in California or something.
I should, bro.
How do you like it?
I like it. I mean, I think it's a little it's a little drastic.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm going to roll with it.
All right. I like it.
What do they say?
I guess if she's happy. Happy life.
Happy life.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
How was your week, Tony?
Can't complain. Another busy week. A lot going on. DGS 5 is this coming week.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun. A little cross-pollination there.
Will you let your wife dye your hair?
I don't have any hair. Sometimes I have hair. Sometimes I have hair. In the wintertime, I usually have hair.
Will you let her dye?
No, but she would also not be interested in it.
Okay.
Yeah, she's not. She has actually gone to the kind of a new fad for women to just quit dyeing their hair.
So my wife's
hair is not dyed. She doesn't even dye her own hair.
Hmm.
She's got gray streaks in it and actually looks pretty good.
It's kind of like a thing with the black women have done the last few years. They don't get permanents and things like that anymore. They've kind of gone to the natural hairstyle.
There you go.
The afro, so.
Yeah, I like it. What about you? When's the last time you had hair?
Well, I have hair when I don't shave it for a couple of weeks, and then I look like Bozo the Clown or George Jefferson. So I don't want to be people laughing at me, so I just keep a cue ball.
All right.
Yeah.
You ever dye it?
I dyed my beard one time.
Yeah, how'd that go?
I did it once, and it only lasted about a week, and I was like, this is way too much trouble. I'm just going to just let
it. Did it look good?
I guess. I don't know.
It looks so good he never did it
again.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks so good that he doesn't have any memory of it.
Exactly.
All right, let's dive into this thing.
We
have a lot to talk about. Did you want to start with the Missouri legislative session? Like, just give it just an overall view of, here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
You're the political expert. Why, when you have a five-month session, and you have all this time, and you see the proper, I'm doing air quotes,
right,
the proper way to pass a bill and the proper time you're supposed to give it to have a House vote and then go up to the Senate and then come back down to the House. And, you know, it takes a matter of days and weeks sometimes, but that's the way you do it.
Sure.
And then it comes down to the last 3 days and they try to do 10 things in three days when they had all these months. And some of these bills have a fairly strong majority behind them that they know they're going to be able to get through. There might be some dissension, but not enough to stop it. So why not just handle some of those things earlier in the year?
Well, Tony, politics is a lot of horse trading and bargaining and all that. And I think because traditionally a lot of business is done in the last day of the session, I think that's kind of been ingrained in the institution. And I think people don't work as hard or bargain as hard as they can in the early factors because they know there's going to be a mad rush at the end. And I think people just really just enjoy the thrill or the adrenaline of, and Tim will probably tell you this, and a lot of the other legislators have said this, I think they enjoy the adrenaline rush of trying to pass bills with a 6 p.m. deadline mandated by the Missouri Constitution.
Right. I really do.
I think it's really that.
I just think it's like straight procrastination. Like, just why do it now? Let's just go home. Why work hard now?
Well, they're not working very hard the first four months.
Yeah, exactly.
They're doing that the first 4 months of the year.
Let's go out to dinner. Where do you want to get drinks tonight?
Well, you know, that's all been.
And then it gets down to the last week, and then it's like, okay, now we got to do stuff.
And there's, like I said, there's a lot of horse trading and stuff to get to a final bill or a final way that you want a bill to be read. And
right.
That takes a lot of time.
So probably no bigger story coming from the Missouri legislative session than the abortion bill, which sort of started as the fetal heartbeat bill and now kind of turned into the 8-week bill, the 8-week ban. No pregnancy can be terminated after 8 weeks. this in Missouri, along with bills in Alabama and a couple of other states, have really made a lot of national news as being, you know, a massive step forward for the pro-life movement, because this essentially wipes out the vast majority of abortions that are performed in Missouri and in these other states. There is a thought process out there that I believe that it's, I've not heard a Missouri politician say this yet, but I've heard it said by politicians in some of these other states, that the reason that these bills are so strict is they are trying to force a Supreme Court case, which would then force the Supreme Court to reexamine Roe versus Wade. Do you feel like that's the ultimate goal of the people that are writing these bills, is to get this in front of the Supreme Court?
I do. I think that is the ultimate strategy, especially since President Trump has been able to put two conservatives on the court. I think a lot of pro-life activists and a lot of conservatives see this as our window to try to get abortion banned nationwide. I agree. Pat Robertson, the televangelist, made a little controversy this week when he was against the Alabama heartbeat bill because he said it was, quote unquote, too extreme. And the part that he was saying that was extreme and which may give it some issues if it goes to the Supreme Court is there's no exception for rape or incest. Yeah. And that may be the poison pill that may be a little too much for the Supreme Court, especially Judge Roberts, who is now made himself the swing vote on the court. Yeah. That may be too much for him to swallow. But yeah, these court cases, these cases are definitely designed to get to the Supreme Court and make a final ruling.
And the
ruling.
Rape and incest thing, I think, is exactly the mechanism to get it there, because, again, I've seen quotes from politicians in these other states. I haven't heard anybody in Missouri say it, but they have said, yes, as a pro-life, as the author of this bill, I think that there should be an exception in there for rape or incest, but I didn't put that in there because I want to be sued. Yeah. I want legal challenges to this bill because that's the only way we can get it in front of the Supreme Court. I think most of these even hardcore pro-life people are okay with the rape and incest ban being in there. But I think that their goal is to get it to the Supreme Court on the merits of these lawsuits that'll be brought against them, fighting for things like, you know, the ability for an abortion in cases of rape and incest. And I think the ultimate goal, tell me if you think this is the truth, is that to get this in front of them and have this type of measure pretty much adopted nationwide, but with the addition of the rape and incest.
I'm just wondering, and we'll ask Speaker Jones when he comes in, because he's the attorney, but if this does get to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court, the majority, agrees fundamentally with the heartbeat law, but maybe Judge Roberts or one of the other justices has a problem with the no rape and incest, I'm wondering, can the court affirm this law but cut out saying, but you have to put something in about rape and incest, or does it have to be all or nothing?
Ah.
You know,
yeah,
can they cut
question.
Can they cut stuff out and say, we agree with the bill, but you got to input exception for rape and incest or not? So.
Do you think that if, just hypothetically, do you think that if this bill that we have in Missouri now would be adopted nationwide with the addition of the rape or incest? So an 8-week ban, no abortions after 8 weeks of pregnancy, except for in cases of a medical emergency regarding the mother or rape or incest, and that's the law of the land. Do you think that the abortion issue is essentially shut down in the country for at least a while?
I think it will. I think what ultimately is going to happen, and a lot of pro-abortion activists have been wanting to go this route, but they're saying that then you'll have like abortion pills or some type of abortifacients where this will be between you, your doctor, and God. That if mm-hmm. you want to have an abortion, you go to your doctor's office. He gives you a pill in a few days or whatever.
But I don't think you'd be able to get that pill after 8 weeks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And you can't probably do that with a full-term baby.
Because the penalties against any doctor that would perform an abortion after 8 weeks in these bills is...
Yeah,
stiff.
Isn't it like 99 years?
99 years in jail for the Atlanta Alabama.
Alabama one. Yeah. I think the Missouri one is 15 years.
And I like too the way they
maybe
designed
it's 5 to 15 or something.
I
like
think
that.
That's what it is. And I like too how our colleague and our good friend Representative Schwarr, how this bill was put together. That even if the 8 week ban is overturned, then it goes to 14. Weeks, and then if the Supreme Court does something else, then this is what
our
law
does. Yeah, I don't think
it goes
to 14 first. I think it first goes to like 12 and then to 16, and then and it slowly sort of jumps up if it doesn't.
Yeah, and they're like, if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, then abortion is automatically, you don't have to go back to the legislature, it's automatically outlawed in Missouri. So I think that was very smart the way that they wrote that.
They did. Ben
Shapiro. Good job, Nick.
Ben Shapiro, Newsmaker Nick, baby.
Newsmaker
we'll probably
Nick.
Talk
That's
to him
right.
next week. He was still a little too busy to come on today.
We want him on his A game. He hasn't been getting much sleep this week.
Ben Shapiro said, had a quote this week that said, the Missouri bill was the best written of all of them.
Good.
That he has seen. So, yeah, high praise. All right, we're going to take a break. Got plenty more issues to get to. Chris, you mentioned Jamestown Mall. I want to talk to you about that. And we'll get into some of the national issues, too, when we get back. Don't go anywhere. It's the Weekend Report. On FM News Talk 97.1. Welcome back to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo, Chris Arps, and our producer Brian McKenna in studio. Just talking about some of the big local issues of the week. And you mentioned earlier in the show, Chris, Jamestown Mall.
We got history, me and you, Jamestown Mall. Was that your first job?
It was my second job.
I think it was my second job.
It was my second job and probably my... the best job I had.
Did you work
when
at Chick-fil-A?
I worked at Superstars.
Okay. I was Sears
selling
Hardware.
Selling hats and... Wow. You had a legit job.
Sears Hardware is legit?
Well, compared to what I was doing, trust me.
Okay.
Trust me. Yeah, I was selling hats and sweatshirts and jerseys.
You got pictures?
Probably somewhere.
I like to see pictures of you back
too.
In the day. It's that Stardust. I remember Starters.
Superstars.
Superstars, yeah. See how memorable it was to me.
Yeah. The uniform was a green polo shirt that said Superstars and then black Adidas pants.
Were you on commission? Mm.
That was the move. No.
Oh.
No. Minimum wage, baby.
What was minimum wage back then?
I want to say it was $4.35, but it could have been maybe like $4.50 or something.
Brian, I remember when the minimum wage was $3.35 an hour.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I remember.
Dude, that was big money back in the 70s.
Yeah.
I remember we would get like a, I want to say it was no more than quarterly. It might only been biannually. Hmm. They would come in and they would review you.
Yeah.
And it was your opportunity to get a raise. And
you
were graded in three areas. Mm-hmm. And in each of these three areas, if you were to get like a perfect score in each area, that you could get a nickel an hour.
Wow.
For that section. If you didn't do quite as well, maybe you'd only get 2 or 3 cents, or maybe you'd get nothing. Yeah. So the biggest raise you could get when they did these reviews was 15 cents.
Wow.
Because it was a nickel for each of the three areas. That was the highest you could
possibly
get.
Nobody ever got 15 cents, did they?
I don't think anybody ever got 15 cents. But I also remember thinking to myself, like, everybody would get all geared up for these reviews, and it's like, 15 cents?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm, you know, it's a part-time job while I'm in school, So I'm only working probably 20 hours a week, and now you're going to just add 15 cents to each hour. It's like, this is nothing.
Dude, you should have went to Sears Hardware. We had 10% discount. We got paid every Thursday.
Whoa. Yeah. When I worked as a bagger, when I worked as a bagger at Schnucks, you got paid weekly.
I worked at Schnucks
and
the bakery department,
and you could cash your check at the service center.
Yeah. Now, were you in the union at that point?
Yeah, you had to be in the union. What was it? 633 commercial food and workers.
I voted to strike once.
No, oh, okay.
Nice.
Just because I thought it would be cool to vote to strike.
And were you 17 living at home
I was 16. I was a bagger.
Living at home.
And I voted to strike.
All your bills paid for. Yeah. No more. You weren't going to worry about where your
Erica!
Next meal.
But yeah, that was sweet. You got paid weekly, and you take your check right up to the service center, and they would cash it for you. Oh, man, that was cool.
Oh, we digressed a little bit.
The good old days.
All right, back into it here. It all started because we said Jamestown Mall.
Jamestown Mall.
Steve Stanger making more news this week, more information coming in about his federal indictment, and that was that there was a bribe scheme. I don't think it was completed, but they were taking the steps forward to he was involved in taking some bribes to give a contractor a good deal at the former Jamestown Mall for somebody to come in and redevelop that area. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm telling you what, just as a person who lived right next to Jamestown Mall, and we literally used to walk up there, I grew up there, I'm glad that the development didn't go through. Because what they're talking about putting up there is like a logistics warehouse, you know, small manufacturing kind of facilities there. And I just don't think that's the right place for that. I think it would bring down the home values and just not the right spot. But apparently from the Post-Dispatch reporting, it looks like that Steve Stanger wanted a particular company to develop Jamestown Mall. And in order for them to develop the mall, he suggested that they hire some consultants that were connected to him. There's also allegations that it's blacked out in the indictment that a county council member may have allegedly accepted a bribe to vote in favor of this company getting a deal. You've got the developer saying that, yes, Steve Stanger did ask that we hire his consultants, but we refuse. You have a middleman who works for the developer who says that he knows nothing about this. He's just working as the go-between between this. But, you know, you can make a whole lot of allegations about this if you read between the lines.
Yeah.
But I think the short end of this is we are not finished yet with indictments concerning the Steve Stanger saga scandal.
How broad could it possibly go?
I don't know. I mean,
like you just mentioned that there could be county council members involved. There, you know.
I mean, you know, this week the state auditor, Nicole Galloway, is going to do an audit of all of the St. Louis County contracts. So we really won't know how deep this corruption really went until she finishes with her audit. But to think that it was just the Jamestown Mall and the
Northwest Plaza
and that was it, I doubt it.
No, in fact, it seems like the more and more we learn, it seems like he was corrupt essentially from the jump. From the very beginning, this guy was operating at a very shady level.
And the thing is, a lot of people are perplexed about this because they're saying, well, you know, he really didn't gain a lot from this personally himself. Why would he do this? Why would he risk all of this? And what people aren't understanding is, yeah, he may not have made a whole lot of money on this scheme. He did when he was loaning himself the campaign money and got paid back 8% interest.
Right.
But the main part of this scheme was to raise as much money as possible so that I can scare away potential people from running against me. Or if somebody does run against me in a primary, I crush them so that no one will run against me in the future.
Yep.
Steve Stanger wanted the largest campaign chest he could amass to scare away people. It wasn't so much to enrich himself, but it was to stay in power for years and years and years by having a huge campaign.
And there's also something to be said for if you're not the richest guy in the room, but your friends are the richest people in the room.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
That goes a long way.
It sure does.
And like you said, it was all about the campaign money and just making the right friends and putting enough money away to stay in power forever.
And that's really how the, I mean, you know, I'm not going to be naive and say this is not how politics works. I mean,
but this is a special level of.
Well, you can't be just this blatant and open about it that, hey, you do this for me, I'll do this for you, quid pro quo. You can't be that.
This is a lower level than what even.
Exactly. Because you don't want to get to the point that maybe somebody is a politician or is in an influence of power, and maybe they do have a friend,
yep.
And maybe this friend does have a legitimate business or a legitimate thing that they want to do, and you don't always want it to look like, oh, well, he's just doing this as a friend to a favor for a friend or anything like that. Sometimes it is legitimate to do help friends and associates in politics, but you can't have the appearance of quid pro quo.
Right. And now it's so obvious why Better Together folded shop. Could you imagine if they were still trying to push that initiative?
Yeah.
And more is coming out about Steve Stanger, and he was their golden boy for so long. They knew, like, this is going to be all over us. We got to shut this
thing
down.
And I still will say, and Cox gave me a hard time thinking I was giving Tony Messenger and the Post-Dispatch credit, but I wasn't. I still think when they lost the Post-Dispatch's support, Better Together, and they weren't going to have them every other day or daily blasting out propaganda in favor of it, I think that was the ultimate decision Better Together made to, hey, let's shut this down. We don't have a propaganda organ to blast out this stuff anymore.
I can totally see that. Let's jump into a national story here. Lindsey Graham is trying to pass a bill that would stop asylum claims being made at the actual border. That would remove that entire mechanism off the southern border of the United States. So if people just show up, there's nothing for them. There's nothing for them to do. Mm-hmm. There's no ability for them to file for asylum or get into the country. You have to file all of that with the proper authorities in your own countries, with the United States embassies and things like that, and then have your cases processed by United States officials, but not on the border. I think it's a great way to eliminate a lot of the issues we're having at the border. I also don't think it has a snowball's chance at passing.
Well, you have to do something. I mean, basically, our asylum laws give people incentives to come to this country. They know exactly what to say that I'm in fearful of my life or my children, and I need asylum. And they're taking advantage of it. I mean, that's why we have 100,000 people coming to this country every single month. We can't absorb that many people like that, especially when we don't know who they are. So I think this asylum suggestion or by Lindsey Graham is a good thing. Like you said, it has a snowball's chance of probably happening. But as I always say, this is a presidential election year, and I think a good proposal like this gives the Republicans something to
at least they're trying. At least
on.
There's something
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
At least they're proposing policy.
Exactly.
And they're putting an idea forward instead of just saying it's a mess. We got to get these people out of here.
Yeah. And Thursday, President Trump proposed new immigration reforms that a lot of the liberals were upset with. You know, I heard that 80% of new green card registrations are from people who already have family here. Trump wants to eliminate that and give you tests on, are you proficient at English? Mm. Do you have what type of schooling do you have? You know, people try to say that that's racist and you're just trying to keep out third world people and brown people and all that. But doesn't a country really want educated people coming to their country instead of people that are coming and are going to be a drain on social services? Makes sense.
People who can contribute to society.
And it's just like the HB program. You got to have certain skill sets to, you know, achieve an HB where you basically get to work in the country. Why wouldn't it be the same,
Make it broad.
Yeah,
all across the board. I'm voting for you, Brian.
I don't know that any of these are going to make it through, but again, I'm just glad to see that they're putting stuff out there because that's the biggest problem. I think that's the biggest problem the Democrats face right now is that so many of the people running for president they're not putting forth any policies. They're not talking about what they're going to do. They just talk about how much they don't like the president. Yeah. They're talking about how they're going to stop the Republicans.
Or they're talking about ridiculous policies like a $32 trillion green deal, which none of them
have said. But they're not even voted on anyway. They won't vote on that either.
Yeah. And Mitch McConnell did the great move that put it on the floor. And remember, they all voted against it.
Yeah, or they all voted present.
Yeah, present.
They all voted present.
Here's your bill. Let's vote on it.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we get back, I'm going to leave a little extra time for Ryan. So we're going to take a break now so we have an extra couple minutes for Ryan Finley, the executive director of the American Soybean Association. We're going to talk to him about the tariffs, the situation happening. Is it affecting farmers as much as opponents of the tariffs would have you believe? We'll know in a minute. We'll talk to Ryan next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Weekend Report on FM News Talk 97.1. I miss you. Had to play this one.
Yes. Sorry.
No. There it is. I like how you were so confident that it was... That you had time to move the mic. You know exactly how long it is before that note hits.
It's been 19 weeks in a row.
That's right.
So I
welcome back to The Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo in studio with my partner Chris Arps. Brian McCann, our brand new producer, is in the studio.
The Golden
as
Boy.
Well,
thanks.
One more segment to go before we get into hour number two. And coming up in that second hour, we are going to be talking to former Missouri Speaker of the House, Tim Jones, going to be joining us for a good portion of that hour to wrap up everything that happened in the Missouri legislature this week and this session. But this week was especially crazy, as it always is. And Tim can shed some light on everything that happened
there. I wonder if
his
adrenaline still gets pumped up on the last day of the session the speaker.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him that. I want to know about that, what I talked to you about earlier, too.
What's that?
Why does everything go down at the last
he
second?
He would know.
Yes. We're going to find that out. So that's all coming up in the second hour. Don't forget, if you miss anything from today's show, or you do miss anything from today's show, or you just want to hear it again, download the podcast absolutely free. Radio.com app is the best way to do that. Download the Radio.com app. Favorite the radio station, and then you have access to everything. You can stream the station 24/7 anywhere you are, and you will have access to all of the podcasts, including, of course, The Weekend Report, all the shows here on the station. And again, all of that is absolutely free. You can get our podcast pretty much anywhere you get podcasts, but the Radio.com app is the best place to do so. And one more thing, don't forget about our YouTube channel, our YouTube playlist. Weekend Report playlist. We've been putting videos up there throughout the week, keeping content, checking in with you guys throughout the week, so you don't have to wait until just Saturday to get some information from the Weekend Report. You can go to 971talk.com/weekendreport if you want to see our webpage, and the YouTube video player is right there, or you just go to the 971 YouTube page and click on the Weekend Report playlist.
Yes.
Great ways to keep up with everything that we are doing here. Right now, as I mentioned earlier, we are going to talk to our guest, Ryan Finley. He's the executive director of the American Soybean Association. Looking forward to having this discussion about tariffs with Ryan. Thank you for joining us, Ryan. Are you with us?
I am. Glad to be on.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Great to talk with you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm looking forward to a little hockey game tonight. But other than that, it's a beautiful day in St. Louis.
Yeah, no kidding. So, Ryan, real quick, just I just mentioned your title, Executive Director of the American Soybean Association. Talk about, what you do in that role and, what your job entails.
Yeah, sure. So just a little change. I'm the CEO of the American Soybean Association.
Okay.
And we are based here in St. Louis. We represent the soybean growers of the United States on the policy front. So we have an office in D.C. Our headquarters are here in St. Louis, and our farmer leaders from around the country want us to have the headquarters here so that we maintain a close proximity to soybean growers that are in the heartland.
Mm-hmm.
And we have We have farmer leaders in 26 different states. We have a big board of 54, and all of those are farmer leaders that actively farm today. And our president actually farms in Western Kentucky. So wow. That's who we are and a little bit of who we represent. The focus of our organization is on policy.
Well, and it makes sense that you would be located here in the state of Missouri, because for maybe people who aren't quite aware, you know, I know that everybody knows that we have a lot of farmers in the state of Missouri, but soybean is especially is our primary farming export, right?
Yeah, soybeans are a big part of the Missouri economy, a big part of agriculture in the United States. So it's kind of fun that that we have a really strong program here. Norburn, Missouri claims themselves as a soybean capital of the world. They do a great job marketing that, and it's a lot of fun. They do a festival every year. So, yeah, Missouri is the heart of soybean country.
So one issue that keeps on popping up in national politics, something that we keep hearing about, is our quote-unquote trade war with China and mm-hmm. how the president continues to put tariffs on Chinese goods, and they have been combating that by putting their own tariffs on our stuff, and a lot of it is affecting farmers. So you hear a lot of people that are opponents of what the president is doing with these tariffs, saying that, you know, trade wars are bad for everybody, but it is especially hurting our farmers. What say you? Is that an accurate statement that the farmers are being damaged by the tariffs that the president is levying?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is causing a lot of harm in the countryside. And so let's step back, and I'll give you a quick version, and then if we want to dive into anything particular, I'd be happy to. But
sure.
The genesis of this is really this 301 investigation that the U.S. government did, and that shows that China cheats. China cheats when it comes to intellectual property rights, forced technology transfer. There's a couple of other areas where no one has stood up to China. And so this president stood up and said, look, we're not going to take this. In fact, you're going to change your ways. And until you do, we're going to implement a tariff system. And China said, well, let's sit down and negotiate. But if you're going to put tariffs against us, we're going to put tariffs against you. So they retaliated to the U.S. tariffs. And when they retaliated, they hit agriculture. And they hit agriculture directly on the number one commodity that they purchased from the U.S., and that's soybeans. So 2 years ago, China imported around $14 billion worth of soybeans from the United States. And today, it's a fraction of that because China chose to retaliate with tariffs against soybeans and other agricultural commodities. But that's really where this has started. So it was intellectual property rights started it. The president said, we're going to force you to negotiate, and we're going to do that through tariffs. China retaliated to those tariffs, and unfortunately, it's been an escalation on both sides of the tariffs. Instead of resolving the differences, finding an agreement, getting rid of the tariffs, and back to a trading system.
Ryan, this is Chris Arps. I know that during the 2016, the president got a lot of support from soybean and corn farmers, from the agricultural sector in general. What would you say today? Are your members still supportive of the president generally, even if these tariffs are hurting their bottom line today? And do they recognize that maybe in the long run that they may be a deal done that may help them in the long run?
I think farmers are really frustrated right now. We have heard over and over again from our farmers over the last 2 weeks. And so I'm going to say, the inflection point in agricultural country has changed in the last 2 weeks, and that is there was this anticipation that a deal was going to be done, and instead of a deal being done, we saw an escalation. And when we saw that escalation in tariffs, it was really demoralizing to farmers. And so we're talking to people in Kentucky, in Iowa, in North Dakota that are just fed up with this ongoing negotiation, and they're expecting a deal, and they're expecting things to turn around. It is painful right now, and farmers are frustrated.
I know that some of the tariffs and these issues have hurt, you know, the farmers' bottom line, and I think Congress gave some aid to the farmers. Is that something that's in the works now to try to help farmers get tied over until we get this tariff situation taken care of?
right? It was last year that U.S. Department of Ag provided some trade assistance to farmers. And I'm going to be crystal clear with this. Farmers hate that.
Yeah.
Farmers do not want government payments. They don't want any of that. What they want is a market system that when there is a buyer out there that wants our product, that we can sell it to them. Unfortunately, the trade war has broken that market system that was working really well for us. And so the president has said, farmers, we think, or farmers, we're going to give you $15 to $20 billion that's going to help you through this tough time. And so as an organization, we've been talking to farmers every day for 2 weeks saying, what makes sense? And there's a lot of farmers saying, look, if there's a payment, we're going to take it, but we have to make sure that there is something mid and long term. So, yeah, a little assistance to get us through to help us pay our bills to our lender this year is helpful. But how do we get away from this big stockpile of soybeans in the United States? And then long term, how do we develop markets with other countries internationally that want our products?
Only a couple minutes left here with Ryan Finley. He is the CEO of the American Soybean Association. Ryan, is there a if you could decide how this ended up or put a proposal forward, what do farmers want to see? What do they want to have happen right now?
I think farmers would love to see an agreement reached that ends the tariffs. If we could fix some of this intellectual property right, that would the issues there would be great. But end the tariff war and get back to a market system that allows us to sell our products to China. That's what farmers want right now.
Is there a place that people can keep up with what you guys are, you know, to get the truth of what farmers are thinking and what they want? Is there like websites or anything out there that people can follow to keep up with what you guys, you know, your guys' thoughts on this issue and any proposals that you guys might have to address it?
You know, I have to laugh a little because I talked to a farmer this morning. He'd been up for 24 hours and he was pushing hard to plant as much as he could before rains hit tonight. And he said, Ryan, I was up all night long and I was on Twitter and I was posting on Twitter. Twitter's a great, it's a little unfiltered. You're going to get opinions at 2 a.m. about what they think. So obviously, you know, you have to hit the right hashtag, but soygrowers.com is our website. We tend to put out press statements from time to time about what we think is going on. And I really think any opportunity you have to listen to a farmer, hear what they're saying directly from a farmer's mouth in any form of media, that's the way to get the real story.
Well, and we certainly appreciate that because, you know, you hear politicians on both sides sort of quoting farmers or propping up messages that they've heard from different places that, you know, fit their agenda. But it's
right.
Good to hear the truth from a group that, you know, it represents a large number of farmers and what you guys are thinking. Ryan Finley, CEO of American Soybean Association. Do you have any personal social media websites, anything that people can follow?
Soygrowers.com is probably the one that I would direct everybody to. And then our Twitter is at @ASA_soybeans. And that's really where we drive everybody to.
Great. Great stuff, Ryan. I hope we can have you back again soon and check back
great.
With you as this issue continues.
Fantastic.
Right.
Take care, gentlemen.
You
Thank
bet.
You.
Thank
Appreciate
you so much.
It.
Ryan Finley, the CEO of American Soybean Association. Great stuff there from him. We are just about out of time, but we have a whole second hour to go. In the second hour, Chris and I, you got something?
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you like soybean burgers in school?
No.
Okay. just want to get your opinion on that.
Chris and I will tackle some of the big stories of the week when we get back. And former Missouri Speaker of the House, Tim Jones, is going to be joining us for the bulk of the second hour as we discuss everything that happened in the Missouri legislature. I can't say that word today.
Yeah.
Legislator, legislative, whatever.
Just say the assembly.
In Jeff City.
The assembly.
Good Lord.
Keep pounding those monsters.
We'll be back in a minute.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.